You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Terrence Houston, and this is The Ecologist Goes to Washington, a podcast program by the Ecological Society of America, where we interview scientists involved with public policy. Today, I'm interviewing David Inouye on his tenure as president of the Ecological Society of America. What is your personal story regarding how you first became an ESA member? What drove you to pursue the presidency?
I started as a graduate student in 1971, and I know that I've been a member of ESA since at least 1974, because when I was moving from Maryland out to Colorado earlier this year and going through all the papers I'd stashed up in the attic, I found a canceled check from 1974 written to the Ecological Society of America for my membership dues that year. And the reason I joined was I wanted the kinds of benefits that members get, like access to the journals, like reduced registration fees for the annual meeting, the ability to join chapters and sections. And so throughout my career and continuing now, it's been a great benefit to me to be a member. And I've been happy to be able to support the society in a variety of ways, not just through membership since that time. So I have served on various committees for the ESA in the past. I did serve a couple of terms as secretary of the governing board, and that gave me some insights into how the society is run. And what happened in my case was that Terry Chapin, who was a past president several years ago, contacted me and asked if I'd be willing to run for the election. And I thought about it, decided that would be an appropriate way for me to help my professional society in a way that a senior person can, who can make the time commitment that it takes to be the society's president. So I agreed to run. I was fortunate enough to be elected and then served for a year as president-elect. Recently finished my term as president for a year, and now I'm continuing on the board for almost another year as past president.
You also run ESA's listserv EcologL. What was the impetus that led to its creation?
When I got interested in microcomputers and got interested in the internet, I began to appreciate the power of that kind of communication and the potential that it had for allowing ecologists to interact in ways that they might not otherwise be able to, because it could be an international audience and it's accessible to anybody who has an internet connection. And so I guess when I started, this was about the time listserv lists were beginning to become more popular. And so I did this partly so I would be able to take advantage of that resource myself when I had questions I was hoping to get feedback on from other ecologists, but also to make that a resource that other people could also use.
How many members are on it now?
I think we're up over 19,000 now, and people from at least about 65 different countries.
You seem to do quite a bit of national and international collaboration, including your work with the Intergovernmental Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services. Would you tell us how ESA works with other ecological societies?
There are quite a few other ecological societies. The Ecological Society of America is the largest in the world, although I should point out that we actually share those ESA initials with the Ecological Society of Australia, so I have to be a little bit careful about just saying ESA. But I've had a particular interest in how to increase collaboration among ecological societies of the world, and that was something that was also a goal of the British Ecological Society. And so the two of us got together and started to think about how we might be able to increase communication, and so he hosted a meeting a couple of years ago during their annual meeting for representatives of ecological societies around the world, and that's, I think, becoming a tradition now among a variety of ecological societies. So when the British and French Ecological Society had a joint meeting last winter in France, there was also a lunch meeting for presidents from or representatives from the world's ecological societies. And I did the same in Baltimore last August at our ESA annual meeting. So I think there are a number of ways that we can benefit by this kind of communication. For instance, One of the things that we did was to have each society talk about one particular success they've had and one particular problem issue that they face, and that gave the other society representatives an opportunity to contribute ideas about how they might solve that problem and how their societies might be able to benefit from that success that the other society had. So I made it a point during my year as a president to try and get to a number of ecological society meetings. I was able to go to the Ecological Society of Japan meeting in Hiroshima last year, the Ecological Society of Mexico's annual meeting, the British and French Ecological Society meeting. I've tried to take advantage of those opportunities for international collaboration. And then you mentioned IPBES or IPBES, or the Intergovernmental Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services. It turns out that the first project that they've adopted as a fast-track project is focusing on the status of pollinators around the world, and that's an issue I have a particular interest in ever since doing my dissertation work on bumblebees and subsequent work on bumblebees and hummingbirds and flies as pollinators. And so I volunteered to help serve as one of the U.S. representatives to the IPBES meeting that was focusing on pollinators. And so I've been working on that for the last 2 years, and this coming week I'll be focusing on doing the copy editing for our final report, and that should be out sometime in February 2016, we hope, after gaining approval of all the 120 or so member countries that are participating in IPBES.
Last winter, you had the opportunity to discuss your research and the issue of climate change with policymakers on Capitol Hill when ESA participated in Climate Science Day this past February. What was the reception you got from those offices?
I think we had a pretty positive response from most of the offices that we visited. The staff people that we spoke with knew we were coming. They were a little bit prepared. And I think the ESA members, which included Bruce Byers, and with help from you and Allison from the Public Affairs Office, did a good job of helping us know who we were going to be visiting, what we needed to, what the message was that we might want to convey to them. And because I was visiting my elected representatives from Colorado, I had some tie there that I could say, well, I'm a voter in your legislative district, and this is a concern of mine that I think should be a concern of a broad audience, including policymakers, and that's why I'm here to talk with you about it. So I think we had about as good a response as we could have hoped for.
In a previous edition of the Ecologist Goes to Washington podcast, you reflected on how your National Science Foundation-funded research was singled out and critiqued by a Fox News show. Has that experience affected how you communicate science? What lessons, if any, do you think other scientists can take from that experience?
The way this came about is that my NSF grant was funded initially as part of the stimulus bill, the ARRA bill. And Senators Coburn and McCain, who are relatively conservative senators, I guess had their staffers put together a list of what they called the 100 most wasteful uses of the stimulus bill funding. But one of them happened to be the NSF award that I had received for studying the effects of the change in climate on wildflowers out here in Colorado. Then I guess Sean Hannity's news show on Fox News picked up on that report and decided that they would do a TV story about some of these most wasteful uses of the stimulus bill funding. And so they sent a TV crew out to Crested Butte, Colorado. At that point, it was, I think, November, December, and the road was already closed out to the lab, so they couldn't actually visit the site where this research is taking place. And they did interview me, not in person, but over an ISDN line from a studio at the University of Maryland, but they ended up not using what I said. But that whole experience, I think, gave me some insights into the interaction between policy and science and politics. And when I give seminars now about this research, I often thank the audience as taxpayers for providing the finances that support science in the United States, including the budget of the National Science Foundation and the small part of that that goes to the Division of Environmental Biology that funds ecology projects, and the small amount that came to the Rocky Mount Biological Lab and University of Maryland for supporting my research. So I think it's that experience has actually allowed me to help educate a broader audience about this interplay between politics and science funding. So I think in the end, it's been a positive experience. I did contact both of those senators' offices, Senators Coburn and McCain, and volunteered to explain to them why I thought this was not a waste of taxpayers' money, but I never heard back from them.
When you assumed the ESA presidency, what goals did you have for your year-long term? Were there certain ESA initiatives that you wanted to see advanced? And do you think these objectives came to fruition?
As I mentioned earlier, one of my particular interests was trying to develop some of the international contacts among ecological societies of the world. And I think I'm pleased with the successes we've had with that so far and hope that that will continue. So I've tried to make sure that Monica Turner, who's the current president, and that David Lodge, the president-elect, are aware of that initiative that I tried to push. And I hope that they'll continue to do things like have a meeting or a sub-meeting at the annual meeting for representatives of ecological societies from around the world. And then one other focus, of course, during my particular tenure was the fact that this was our centennial year. And so there was a lot of planning that had been going on. Oh, I think it actually had started maybe 5 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, when I was on the governing board as secretary. We were already, as a society, beginning to think about what kinds of plans we should make for our centennial. And so it was great to be able, as president-elect and then president, to see all those plans come to fruition. And I think we as a society should be proud of the work that groups like the Historical Records Committee did, planning that timeline, showing the presidents of the society, the work that all of the chapters and sections did to make preparations for activities at the centennial meeting, and particularly the ESA staff, which really worked hard to make sure that that centennial was going to be a success, and it was.
Were there any highlights to serving as president of the Ecological Society of America during its centennial year?
I think one highlight of being able to serve as president during the centennial was being able to be up on the stage there as President Obama gave us a really nice video recording of centennial anniversary recognition. And so that was a particular highlight of that annual meeting.
What advice would you give to your successors about the role of ESA president?
One of the concerns that people who serve on the governing board have, and legitimately so, is how big a responsibility is that and how much time is it going to take. But I'm able to reassure people that the ESA's office in Washington, D.C. has a truly wonderful executive director and staff, and they're there to support the efforts of the elected officers. And that makes our jobs a lot easier. It also provides the continuity that we need with this turnover of the presidency every year. So I think there is a time commitment, but I think there are a number of society members who are willing to put that time commitment into supporting their primary professional society. So I don't think it's going to be too difficult for me to convince candidates that they should agree to serve in the future as ESA president.
And that was David Inouye with the Rocky Mountain Biological Laboratory in Colorado. Thanks so much for listening, and please join us next time when the ecologist goes to Washington.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Catelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.